Welcome to this podcast. I'm Dr. Caroline Leaf, and I'm thrilled that you've joined us today as we talk more around the topic of wellness and the mind-brain connection when it comes to eating, and then the 80% influence that the mind has over food choices and the digestion of food. All these wonderful tips based on my book called Think and Eat Yourself Smart and the accompanying online program called 63 Days to Think and Eat Yourself Smart. Today we're going to talk about fats and proteins, which is a big subject, and I've got my daughter Jessica, who runs our Whole Mind Project, which is our NGO, teaching people and communities how to think and eat themselves smart and change communities. And I've got Jessica joining me again today. Welcome again, Jessica.
Thank you for having me.
Well, we're going to talk about fats and proteins, and I want to just launch this by saying that, you know, we talk about happy cows and unhappy cows, and happy cows being those that are allowed to wander through the fields, and unhappy cows are those, and not, this is not just applying to cows, but it obviously it's to all animals, but those that are put into concentrated animal feeding operations, how it completely and utterly changes the nature of, for example, the fatty acid balance. And the omega fatty acids are vital for brain function, vital for cell function, vital for life. And we are supposed to have a very clear balance between our fatty acids, and you get different types. We're just going to talk about omega-6 and omega-3, for example, and they're supposed to be in a ratio of 1 to 5. So for every 1 omega-6, we should have 5 omega-3s. Now, what they found from the research is that happy cows, the ones wandering through the field and eating the grasses and the herbs and, you know, just naturally happily wandering and doing what a cow does, and we find that they have this perfect balanced ratio. But as soon as you put the, and they also, you know, they work together, the regular enzymes are functioning like they should in the cell membrane. So things are just doing what they should be doing in the body of the cow, which then means that we are going to get that same thing, because you basically, what you eat what the cow eats. So they, when you have this balance, it enables us to feel so much better, more energy, we can think more clearly, we have our blood flows in a much smoother way and more quickly through the body, which is very important. But when the animals are in the concentrated animal feeding operations, this goes crazy. A lot of other stuff goes crazy too. So instead of the balance between omega-6 and 3 being a 1 to 5 ratio, it changes to 7 omega-6s to every 6.5 omega-3. So it's completely out of proportion. And that increases the chance of cardiovascular disease, because now the blood becomes too thick. It doesn't flow like it should. Clots can form. We get cognitive decline because you don't get enough oxygen and blood flow in your brain, and many other things. You've got the potential for cancer, for blood clots, for inflammatory diseases. I mean, there's just a lot of really scary stuff. The other thing about animals that are in concentrated animal feeding operation setups, and Jess, I'm going to ask you to explain what that looks like in a moment, but basically they have higher stress hormones because of the reprehensible conditions, and the meat becomes tougher therefore, because the stress hormones actually remove glycogen from the muscles, and that reduces the lactic acid, and that's what we need to make meat tender. And these hormones also, they also give a lot of hormones to these animals to make them grow fatter and quicker, and a lot of antibiotics. And this, when you have such a lot of hormones added, what happens is it affects the vital B complex vitamins, zinc, copper, chromium, antioxidants such as glutathione, potassium, iron. All these things start changing, reducing vitamins A, E, C. The antibiotics given for constant infections go into the meat and to us. So basically, you know, it's just disrupting the whole balance inside the actual protein of the animal. Jessica, do you want to just add to this?
Yes, so the concentrated feeding operations are essentially taking the logic that we spoke about earlier of monoculture and applying it to livestock. And so really having a lot of animals in small confined operations, or in small spaces where they're just, it's basically a meat factory to produce large quantities of meat, whether it's pigs or whether it's cows or whether it is goats, I mean chickens, any sort of meat. And so this situation puts the animal in extreme stress, and then you really eat a stressed animal, which affects your own health and puts your body into stress. So it's essentially this idea that you're not only what you eat, but you are what you eat eats, which is what Michael Pollan
eats.
And so that is a quote by Michael Pollan, and he really describes the situation where, you know, if you go and get green pasture raised healthy animals that are in ecosystems of farms with a lot of different varieties of plants and animals, they're a lot healthier because that is the way that they have changed naturally. And naturally adapted to work. And so there is the sense that there is a lot of benefits. I mean, not just the sense, but there actually are a lot of benefits coming from when you eat animals, if you do eat animals that are raised in this manner, whereas your animals that come from your large factory farms, not only are they polluting the atmosphere, but they are also, and also, you know, a lot of that toxic waste gets run off into the sewers, and then we end up paying for that through our taxes and environmental cleanup. You also end up paying, obviously, for the health effects. So this meat might seem cheap, but it really is not. And it's just the cost also on the stress that puts these animals and our cost on our humanity, like to put these animals in situations where they are so stressed out and that they are like even attacking each other. And now we have to grow pigs without tails or genetically modify them so they don't have tails because they bite off each other's tails in stress situations where we're taking... It is very a very cruel situation, not only actually for the animals, but also for the people that work in those situations. Often it's immigrants that are paid minimum wages below the minimum wage, that are treated terribly. And these are the people that take the jobs no one really wants because it's terrible that people coming out of these situations, these slaughterhouses with a host of mental issues, because they're constantly killing, they're exposed to these very violent and horrible environments. And so really the concentrated feeding operations is not only for what you eat, but it's just for the whole situation. It's just a very negative situation overall. And we do pay the cost for that, in not only in through our pockets and our dollar, but also through our health, through the way we treat each other and the way we treat the planet that we are in. So it's not being a good steward of the environment.
Jessica, what I also want to stress, because we the title of this podcast is proteins, and I want to stress, we focused on the whole animal being healthy and being pasteurized, etc. Let's talk about the concept of wholeness, because there's such a nutritional focus today on being reductionistic, going from there's so much talk about, you've got to have this many carbs and that many proteins and that many fats, these are the macronutrients, and then your micronutrients, which are your vitamins, minerals, phytonutrients, and so on. There's so much emphasis on the reducing everything down from the holistic, the meats and the plants, etc., down to the individual, pulling out, you've got to have this supplement and that supplement and have a bit of this. We talk now the individual reduced.
Well, it's essentially the same concept when it comes to an ecosystem. So I mentioned earlier, bringing these animals up on farms in ecosystems can actually help the environment. They can be used as grazing patterns that help sequestrate carbon in the ground, that helps reduce the effects of global warming and climate change. And so the whole ecosystem can work together to make the environment a better place. Not only that, though, but it's also in our bodies. It's the same concept. We need to take this holistic approach to eating, where we think of like the food in its holistic sense. Not only is this, how much fat does this piece of meat have in it, and how much protein, or how we tend to, that's very reductionist thinking. We need to think of how this works, not only the food in our lifestyle, but our lifestyle in our environment. So it really is a big picture to detail, rather than just ignoring the big picture and going straight to detail.
So we need to look at the context of things. So we need to look at that piece of meat as not being protein, but also that there's carbohydrates and fats and minerals and vitamins, and they're in a perfect balance. So when we look at an orange, for example, that orange should be eaten in context, which is the whole orange. You're going, because there's a balance of the way that the fiber balances the sugars in the orange, etc., the way that you eat it, and it's the way it's been, the way it grows is the way that you're going to get the best combination, because everything works together to get the best out of
every
nutrient.
For example, if you take something like, you are just focusing on orange juice rather than a whole orange, you can drink a lot more orange juice than you can a whole orange, especially if it's pulp free. Then you get a lot more sugars. It's sort of throwing the whole situation out of balance, where you can only eat so many oranges before feeling sick.
So they actually show that it takes, like, to make a glass of orange juice, about 6 oranges. Now you can lug that glass of orange juice down really quickly, but to eat 6 oranges, it's going to be pretty tough to eat them in one sitting, if you even can manage that. And that's the process there. So when you eat real food properly in context, instead of in reduced down and broken up into its parts, you're going to eat the right amount at the right speeds, and that's all part of then your body functioning like it should. And that brings you to just the concept that I stressed throughout this think and eat yourself smart concept, is that what you think changes your genes, and thinking literally provides 80%. Now think about this. Thinking literally provides 80% of the energy required for genetic expression, which is what you need in order to keep alive. So your thinking is dominating how your genes express, and food is the other 20%. So your thinking thinking plus your food are keeping you alive. And so when our thinking is toxic and our food is toxic, we've got to, you know, this is why we can see health problems starting
to
manifest.
So that is, again, going to the big picture of not just focusing on what foods you're eating to get healthy, but also what you're thinking, what you're doing, what your attitude. So it's a holistic, what are you thinking and what are you eating, come together. And the same with the ecosystem, how everything works together. And then the same with the foods, how everything in that food works together. And, you know, Marion Nestle, who's mentioned before, a professor of nutrition at NYU and a food activist, she said that the problem with nutrient by nutrients science is that it takes the nutrient out of the context of the food out of the context of the diet, and the diet out of a context of a lifestyle.
Great quote.
And so really we need to get back to that big picture holistic way when we just view food, not only when it comes to our what are we thinking and what are we eating, but also the food itself, like the whole ecosystems that they were grown in, and then the food itself, the context of a whole orange as opposed to taking out individual parts. And so this is something that we need to, whether it's proteins, fats, or, you know, we tend to use these words because they're so used by marketers, by people in science,
yeah.
And they've just been so thrown out all the time that we're just so used to them that we actually often find ourselves not stopping and thinking and just thinking, but what does that mean? What does low fat mean? What does this mean? So for example, if you have low fat milk, whole milk has got all the enzymes and nutrients, and you actually end up having less of it because it has, you know, it's got that fat which keeps you satisfied and full, where low fat is you take out a lot of those nutrients and then you have to add. So you often see low fat with added vitamin D, but you have
sugar.
To ask yourself, why are they adding all these things? And then you
the
also
beginning.
End up consuming more of that. And so the same with protein, fats, carbohydrates. Whenever you hear these big words, think first about
the
concept and like the context of the food in a lifestyle, in your lifestyle.
So that milk example that Jessica's given is also when you remove the fat, you actually then increase insulin because your body now has got the fat would actually balance out the insulin. So you get that a negative reaction inside your body, and that insulin will affect your brain function as well. So we do need protein. We do need fats. We're going to talk a bit about fats as well. We do need protein to build, maintain, and repair all our bodily systems. But the thing is that we need protein for everything, bones, muscles, organs, skin, arteries, enzymes, neurotransmitters, building our brain. The genes produce, basically when they switch on, they produce proteins. We've got 8 billion proteins per cell. But the bottom line with protein is that we need Wired for Love protein. We need to get enough high quality protein without overdoing our servings. Of like, for example, muscle meat. Yes, I'm going to ask you to talk about that. And also consider plant proteins, eggs, organ meat. Look for grass-fed beef, pasture-raised poultry. Jess, just quickly talk a little bit
so
about
muscle meat. So obviously, if you're going,
meat.
If you're vegetarian or vegan, you want to go for a lot of plant-based proteins. So I eat a mainly vegetarian plant-based diet. And I do eat eggs as well. And I do eat fish occasionally. So a lot of my protein, though, is coming from things like lentils or chickpeas. And so there are many natural sources of like beans and corns and a lot of your legumes and a lot of your, there's so many different sources, and I definitely recommend that you can look up on that. But if you are going to eat meat, then you really want to, we tend to, in our society today, to eat too much muscle meat, which also causes a lot of waste in terms of the parts of the animal we throw out. Where in previous civilizations, they have really valued the entire animal, especially the organ meats, which are actually higher in nutrition. And also lower in like your bad fats, and they have a better nutrient content and a better fat content. So this organ meats like liver, you know, things like that, if you are going to eat meats, and also a lot of like the bones and the bone broth for all the different nutrients it can give you, like collagen. So if you are going to eat, especially bone broth is a great way to reduce your waste and also reduce your meat consumption. So if you want to go mainly plant-based, but you don't want to give up protein, bone broth is a good way to help reduce the waste in terms of animals, and also get all the nutrients you need without eating too much meat. And so there's many ways of doing this. Eggs obviously are complete protein. They're a great source of protein, especially for if you're vegetarian. That's one of the great sources that you can get if you eat because to get proteins.
Excellent.
And so there are many ways, but I mean, really, if you are going to, first of all, the thing is with proteins, you always want to reduce your consumption, not because, oh, they're bad for you and they're going to kill you. Obviously, depending on what type of proteins you're eating, because obviously you want to always go for like grass-fed or pasture-raised or hormone-free, as natural as possible, as close to the farm as possible, avoiding any factory middlemen. But you also want to be able to get humanely raised meats, obviously, because we need to care about the way that we raise our meats. And also you want to focus in on your organ meats and also your bone broths and eat less muscle meat and eat less meat in general, because the meat tends to push away the vegetables on your plate. So if you're eating more meat, you're going to be eating less fresh produce and eating less grains. So you need to make sure that your meat is a very is a limited part of your diet. It's not, obviously, with everything, you need to eat it in balance. Not, and you don't want to eat it in excess, because so the studies show that this is the closest.
Remember, you're getting your proteins from other things as well. So just one more point about this, and we're going to close off this podcast, is that you need to, just if you may not know, that the chemical messengers of the brain are made from amino acids, and proteins break down into amino acids and fats. And these chemical messengers actually relay information between the neurons and help your memory and your thinking to actually function. So we really do need to regulate this. So the bottom line is, we have to be very careful of messing with our protein, because it's going to mess with our minds. So let's be careful how we use our proteins in our diet. Thank you for joining us today, and we look forward to sharing more on wellness in the next podcast.